That is not Iraq you're hearing. It's Virtual Iraq, a virtual reality program designed to help Iraq veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, and it's trying to help them work through their trauma. It's currently being tested by the Department of Defense. We read about it in Sue Halpern's article in the last New Yorker, and we're joined now by the man who's the driving force behind the program, Albert Skip Rizzo, who's a clinical psychologist at the University of Southern California. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Where did the idea behind Virtual Iraq come from? What was lacking in the regular ways you were trying to treat veterans who were still going through trauma from their experiences?
Well, until virtual reality came on the scene, exposure therapy was typically done by having a therapist guide the patient in imagination and to narrate their story verbally. The problem with PTSD is that one of the cardinal symptoms of the disorder is avoidance of cues and reminders. So, you know, it's a pretty tall order to ask somebody in imagination to revisit some of these painful memories of things that they've gone through, some of their experiences and so forth. And you never know what's going on in the hidden world of imagination. So what VR does is put a person back into the sights, smells, sounds, feelings of the scene. And it serves as a very useful tool where you know what the patient is seeing, and you can help prompt them to go through the experience in a very safe and supportive fashion.
How do you make the virtual reality experience specific to each individual soldier or Marine or service member?
We've built into the software the capacity for the clinician to have complete flexible control of the environment. So we can put a patient in a desert road in a Humvee as a passenger in a Humvee, the driver up in the turret. We can put them in a foot patrol walking through a Fallujah-like city, an 18-block square area. We can adjust the time of day, the weather conditions, the ambient sounds. You know, a patient may come in and their trauma was a vehicle blowing up in front of them on a desert road. Mm-hmm. So they may sit in the Humvee in the driver's position without any sound, maybe the sound of wind, for the first session and begin to talk about what they experienced. And, you know, prior to that, their story may have been, I was driving a Humvee and the vehicle in front of me blew up and somebody died. Whereas as you go through the therapy, then the patient may be invited to turn on the motor, and we have a vibrating platform so you feel the motor. We may have the smell of body odor that gets pumped into the space because the vehicle is filled with soldiers that might not have bathed in a few days or mm-hmm. whatever. And then they are invited to drive out on the road, and as they start driving out on the road and they start telling their story, different things, sounds, helicopters, jets flying over, insurgents coming out of palm groves, vehicles blowing up, IEDs, so forth, can be delivered into the environment as the patient is ready to handle those things and begin to tell their story. And eventually, as they tell their story, you find out that, you know, it wasn't just a vehicle in front. It was a vehicle with five of their friends that they'd been, you know, in theater with for, you know, 9 months. And the guy that died was, you know, just going to be, discharged in 2 months. And he was looking forward to his family, seeing his family and so forth. So, you know, you start to see a rich depth of emotion emerge as you gradually progress the patient through the various scenarios that the clinician is in full control of.
And the process of populating the scene, is it like when you go to the eye doctor and the patient might say there was a helicopter, and then the person programming the virtual reality says, well, was it an Osprey or a Black Hawk? Was it here or here? Is it like that? You go through different cycles and they say, does this sure. look right? Does that look right?
Yes. You know, what we do find is that it doesn't have to be an exact replica in order for it to have this prompting effect or this evoking process with the patient. You know, a helicopter is a helicopter. The sound of the helicopter is really the emotional driver. So we don't have to have an Osprey versus an Apache or that, although we do have many of those features to try to make it more real and more relevant to the specific patient. And they do notice things that are not right. So sometimes you want to err on the side of being vague in the application, let the patient take it away.
So they can fill in. They can fill it in themselves, right? Rather than getting
something wrong. If sometimes you add too many things in there, and one thing we took a photograph of the inside of a Humvee that we modeled the interior with, and the photograph was taken when the Humvee was parked and not on, and when we modeled it, the switch to turn the vehicle on was in the off position, and believe it or not, our first person to go through it said, "Hey, I can't be driving this Humvee. The switch is turned in the wrong direction," so we had to go back and remodel that little section. So a lot of times you may get yourself into trouble by trying to be overly detailed and not getting it right.
So you talked about things like body odor, and you could rumble their seat with a big bass speaker, the non-visual elements, all the other senses. What role does that play in evoking the memories and, you know, dealing with the trauma?
I think that the visuals sort of put the person in a place, but the sound and the smell and the vibration really drive the emotion. Somebody who's been driving in a Humvee through a desert scene, and it may look like Arizona at first, but then you start adding in elements that are more Iraq-like. And that gets them back to that space, but then all of a sudden the sound of an AK-47 belting out some rounds, all of a sudden you see a big spike in the physiology, the heart rate, and skin conductance. In the city scenario, we've gotten a lot of comments from the ambient soundtrack of a baby crying. So we have an ambient city sound scape, so to speak, and one element is a baby crying, and people react to that.
As they experience this by looking through the virtual reality goggles, what are they using to move throughout the virtual reality environment?
For the navigation interface, we use a game controller. And that works quite well for driving in the Humvee. That's not a problem for that. But soldiers giving us feedback, and they said, look, this game controller just doesn't cut it. This is not something I would have in my hand as I'm walking on foot patrol through a city. I'd have my weapon in my hand. So what we did was we found these molded resin training replica weapons, M4 replicas that are fully weighted so that they have the feel of a weapon. And we mounted a very low-cost thumb mouse on the top of the barrel so that the person can actually hold the weapon in their hand and use the thumb mouse and their body movement to navigate through the virtual environment. Now, another important point here is that the gun doesn't fire. And that's a key element in all of our work here is that we don't have the functionality, we have not put the functionality in purposely for people to fire back and start shooting things because we're not in the business of fostering some sort of revenge fantasy. We think that's at odds with the process of exposure therapy. It's not about trying to kill as many Iraqis and get back at the space. It's about dealing with your own emotional memories and processing it and hopefully healing in that way.
All right. Albert Skip Rizzo, a clinical psychologist at the University of Southern California. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Fred.
Coming up on the show, how does one NPR reporter deal with the stress of covering the war in Iraq? Buffy the Vampire Slayer, of course. That coming up next on the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.